A different kind of journalism today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Lacey Scarmano's WVIK blog turned out to be a national favorite. Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac is also popular. We'll sample both today on Scribble. I want to open with a keen, penetrating question that exemplifies the kind of deep research we do in this program. What is a blog?
Well, I will correct you slightly, too, that to say it's been upgraded to a podcast. So there's a whole other term to throw out there for you.
Well, what's the difference?
My head reels. Podcast, blog.
Right. So they're pretty similar. A blog would be more written, I think. So a writer might have a blog, or people who are into crafts or who are into theater or something very specific. You know, they have their blog and they type and they keep it all on their website. Podcast is pretty similar, but it's just with audio form.
Mm-hmm. Just audio.
Yes. So it's sound. It can be as simple as people talking, one person talking, a group of people talking, or you can have layers of sound with music and ambient sound, and there are many different ways to do it.
And how do people access podcasts?
Usually through their smartphones. So they'll have different apps available where you can go, and most major podcasts will be pushed to these specific apps and you can download it from your phone. They're also available online, so if you're on your computer, you can check out most of them as well.
It's a brave new world for me. I have a computer, but that's all I can say about it. I have a computer.
And I have a smartphone that's much smarter than I am.
Well, that's I shouldn't say uncharitable things, but you set a low bar there. What induced you or the station to get into podcasting?
I think we're just trying to keep up with the times. You know, This American Life has been a radio show around for decades now at this point, and it's really taken off in the podcast world where they started putting it out on these different platforms, and then more people were listening, so you didn't have to turn on your radio at the exact time. And so a lot of these major radio shows started making themselves available to people through a lot of different methods, and people took notice that they were quite popular, and you know, you can listen to them when you're driving or walking or running or just around the house. So there's definitely a market for it. So at WVIK, we decided to kind of hop on that. And so it started the same way. You know, you can listen to Scribble on our website and as a podcast, as well as on air.
I didn't know that.
Surprise. People
so
can find
you
on the internet.
Any time of day, right?
Anytime, anywhere, okay. Yeah.
My goodness.
So how in the world did you get interested in the Liggins case?
So that was brought to us by a newspaper reporter who early in his career was in the Quad Cities. So this was back in 1990. He was a night police reporter for the Quad City Times, and he had his radio going and heard the police dispatch over the radio that there was a fire at an elementary school. So he shows up and finds out that it's not just a trash fire in this schoolyard, it's actually a child's body on fire, which was horrific and clearly stuck with him all these years, you know, being at a crime scene like that. And the case itself was crazy. You know, we're here 27 years later now, and the man, Stanley Liggins, who has been charged with the crime, is still facing trial again. He will go to trial next year. So it stuck with Scott Reeder, and he came to us last year and said, you know, I've been listening to all these podcasts. I'm kind of new to this, but, you know, they're popular. I listen to them when I'm driving, and I think this case would be really great as a podcast. There was a This American Life spinoff called Serial that was kind of a true crime series over podcast, and that was hugely popular. So we knew there was, you know, kind of that want for that kind of storytelling. As gruesome as it may be, there's a lot of nuance to it. And we did it, and it was pretty successful, as you said.
But when you do a podcast, how does that differ from a news program or a documentary? I mean, do you do it in installments, or do you just do the one program and it repeats?
So we did ours in installments. I think we have 17 episodes, and then we had to kind of go on a hiatus because the trial was postponed once again. But so we did 17 different episodes looking back at the case. So, you know, who is Stanley Liggins? Who is Jennifer Lewis? Who was the victim in this case? You know, what kind of environment did she grow up in? And we followed this story up to the point where there were pretrial motions last spring. So then we were doing more up-to-date coverage of what was said in court yesterday, you know, and putting that on the website.
This is because for should there be somebody that doesn't know the case, Liggins' two trials that ended in convictions were overturned.
Yeah, he's been convicted twice. Both were overturned. The first one, I think, was it's been postponed since May now. Our podcast has been because his trial was delayed. But there were these kind of obscure reasons why this trial was getting the verdict was getting overturned. So we kind of looked at why and, you know, the legal reasons behind it and we heard from the actual prosecutor in the case and his actual defense attorneys. So, you know, we're talking to all the people that were there involved.
So have you actually talked to Stanley Liggins himself?
We have not spoken to Stanley Liggins. We've talked to his lawyers a little bit, his past lawyers extensively. We talked to his family members, like a brother, two brothers and a sister, I think. His mother passed away while he was in prison, but not from him directly. His lawyer has, I think, justifiably told him not to, you know, talk to the media. He gave a lot of interviews back in 1990, and a lot of his sound bites were kind of used against him in the court of public opinion. So we're trying not to do that again.
I see. Well, that's a boy. That, you know, that is a long, complicated story. And the thing that amazes me is the overwhelming interest in this country in trials.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I decided a long time ago I would pay no attention to trials because I wasn't on the jury. So, you know, that any opinions I formed didn't count.
Right. So we're kind of hashing this all out. And with the mindset, though, that, you know, the people listening and us ourselves, we have no power over the outcome of this case. So it's more just a, you know, background knowledge of this happened in your community. And here are, it's kind of, you know, kind of a classroom about the law and courtrooms themselves.
So how do you maintain neutrality, which I assume you have to do to operate this?
Yeah, we talk, you know, to people, like I said, Stanley's family. We also talk to the victim's family and a lot of her loved ones. So we try to get voices that can accurately portray all these different characters in the case. And then we also talked to legal experts who had no relation to the case whatsoever. So they were kind of able to look at it from their point of view and say, from a legal standpoint, why certain things happened or how they happen. And so we're able to kind of get that step back and kind of look at the case objectively.
And it really went viral, right? I mean, it was... How popular was it at its height?
Yeah, there's the music charts, the Billboard 200
right.
or whatever. So there's a similar chart for a podcast on the Apple podcast charts. Our podcast, Suspect Convictions, was at number 2 at one point in the world, downloaded hundreds of thousands of times. And I'm not sure up to date how many people have listened, but it was quite a bit.
Why should that be?
I think... Kind of like you said, Don, this topic, really, people are very interested.
Yeah, people take I don't know if I should call it a morbid interest, but they...
A little bit, though, yeah.
Yeah.
But there must be, you know, many murders like this that are problematic You know, I think it took everybody by surprise here that all of a sudden it became as popular around the world as it did.
Yeah, no one more surprised than me.
Yeah.
Well, now that brings up another mystery. Who is this Lacey Scarmana? Where did she come from?
Well, yeah, let's go back there. I don't even know how you ended up here, but we sure are glad you did.
Yeah, let's find out. Okay, let's get to the bottom of this Lacey Scarmana case.
This is the real mystery. Once upon a time. No. Well, I'm from St. Louis originally, but I went to college in Indiana, and that's where I fell in love with public radio and radio and did college news reporting on the station, and then also interned and then was hired at the public radio station in Bloomington, Indiana. Interned after that in Chicago, where one of my colleagues said, hey, there's a job opening at WVIK. And I said, where's that? And he said, the Quad Cities. And I said, where's that? And I applied and interviewed and came to visit, and I loved the area. So I was like, well, I'm from, you know, downstream the Mississippi River, so why not take a crack at the upper half?
Uh-huh. So when did you come aboard here at VIK?
I started about a little over a year and a half ago now.
Uh-huh. So in addition to podcasts, what are your assignments?
A lot of it is podcasts now. We have launched quite a few at this point. There's one called The Gallery Gap that examines, it's a very specific topic, but it looks at inequality in art exhibits and museums around the world. And it's hosted by two women who are involved in the Augustana Teaching Museum of Art and Figge Art Museum. So they're kind of looking at themselves and then gauging national and worldwide trends as well. There's Talking Art, which is a little bit of a nod to Art Talks, which, of course, people still fondly remember. But it's hosted by Carolyn Martin, and it's a little different. But she's, you know, talking with local artists of everything from painters to architects to mid-century modern furniture collectors. So really mm-hmm. taking art in a lot of different directions. And then the one I'm most excited about that we're doing right now is the Great Quad Cities Listen, which has been really fun. It's collecting the stories of the Quad Cities, just, you know, regular people out there living, and everyone has a story to share. So
how do you find those people?
We try to reach out as much as we can, and then they ultimately have to find us, and they sign up on a website to come in and record a conversation. What's neat about it, though, is I'm not interviewing these people who come in. They bring a friend or a family member, or, you know, their pastor in one case, and they have these conversations themselves. So it's a little more intimate. You know, they kind of have some background knowledge and then share stories about, you know, what Hampton, Illinois was like in the 1930s, or what it was like moving to the United States from Mexico in 2005. You know, so we're really...
So do you get a better story if you use somebody who isn't you or another reporter?
I don't know. I would like to think, you know, journalists are trained to interview and can elicit those kind of responses.
And generally, friends are not necessarily.
That's
sold,
true. Yeah.
Right?
The idea came from StoryCorps, which is a national program that airs then during Morning Edition on Fridays. And you know, it's these intimate conversations between two people about, you know, kind of in a way how they got to the point where they are right now, and kind of tracing that back. And so I don't know that one is better than the other, but it's a different approach to storytelling.
So where are these new podcasts on the chart?
They're not quite as high. They're local, focused here in the Quad Cities. So I'm not – they have nowhere near the listenership of Suspect Convictions. But, you know, a lot of people in the area enjoy listening to them and hearing the voices of their
fun.
Community members.
I gotta admit that.
Imagine if we – there was a gruesome murder of a certain former English professor – by a broadcaster, we might be able to generate a little on that.
Do you plan when is the Liggins trial scheduled to get started?
So I think right now they're saying early spring, and it was moved to Waterloo, Iowa, mm-hmm. outside of Scott County.
How will
then
you cover it from?
So the original plan, it was supposed to go to trial back in the summer, and we were going to go and, you know,
right.
stay in a hotel in a couple of weeks and cover the trial. So I'm not sure our trial coverage plans, if Scott Reeder will do it on his own now, or if I'll jump back into the project, because he's continued it. He's working on other cases, and this true crime genre is one that he really enjoys. So he's telling different stories of different cases now also.
Well, I'm amazed to discover that we're on a podcast, right?
Right.
Surprise.
How did that happen? I've not signed any releases. I mean, really. Are there other radio programs that we have here on podcasts?
Yeah, so all of them, I think, are pretty much available in some form online. So, you know, we do the Riverway stories. Those are online. Mm-hmm. Herb Trix's Midwest Week, the interviews he does with reporters, goes up on the web as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you hear from listeners to the podcast, like on the Liggins trial?
Yeah, that one, obviously, since its audience was bigger, we got a little more response to it.
And can you tell what side predominates, guilty or not guilty?
Yeah, so the interesting thing is I think people would like, you know, some cases – it seems a little more black and white, like, oh, man, this guy was wrongly convicted. Or, of course, right. Yeah, he should be in jail. And this one, there's really – it's so nuanced and there's so many factors that I don't think anybody can really say definitively what they think is the truth. But that doesn't stop people from jumping to their conclusions. So, yeah, we've heard – I think the general consensus was people don't – or people do think that Stanley Liggins is guilty – but they don't think he should have been convicted based on some of the errors that happened during the trials, two of them.
Okay.
Life gets complicated, and no more so than when you put it in a court.
Right.
And you try to work it out, and you have champions, the lawyers on both sides, and you never know. I think there will always be an element of doubt in everything we call truth. And that's what makes being human beings so fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I've watched Law and Order, and doing this project was crazy to me because I was like, these are real people that I'm out there talking to, and it's real lives that were disturbed by this, and it's heartbreaking. And so I think, yeah, we had to handle it. It was delicate, and we tried to treat it as such.
Well, Lisa, I guess I'll have to find out how podcasts work now, just to keep up with you. Thank you very much for taking time to visit with us today.
Thank you.
Lisa Scarmana. Well, now that I've been straightened out on blogs and podcast tweet, I got to wondering, why don't you have a blog?
because I'm barely computer literate. And
you don't have to be that literate.
You know, I do have friends who have blogs, and usually what I find if I go to them are, I had oatmeal for breakfast this morning. Steel cut. Okay, right.
Well, that's the kind of stuff that belongs on Facebook. But on a blog, I think you're supposed to engage people in a more profound way. I have a niece who has a blog called, oh, shoot. I can't think of the name of it. It's Something Inc.
Well, you know, there are people who are – there was an article in the paper a couple weeks ago about a young woman who is probably a college sophomore. She is putting herself through college with her blog because what she does is recommend and try out various products for improving your eyebrows and things like that. And it turns out that companies pay her to test out their products and talk about them.
Well, my niece just reviews books. I don't know if there's any money in that, but she does get free books.
Yeah, well, I think there's money in it too. If you have the right number of followers, it's a cheap way for advertisers to advertise.
Well, you know, if either one of us had any economic sense at all, this might be an interesting venture.
Right.
but I don't. My sister was alarmed. I may have told you the story. When I was visiting my younger sister, Julia, we went to downtown Crossville, and they had an interesting little shop there with all kinds of sauces and mustards and so on. And I thought, oh, Bernadette would love this. So I said, I'll take one of that. Give me one of those, one of those. And later on, my younger sister was telling my older sister, and never once did I hear the words, how much, escape right. his lips.
Right. You know, I think my son blogs, the one who's the game designer, but he has various subjects that he's not just games and stuff, but he's gotten interested in the historical Jesus, for instance, and so he gets on debates with other bloggers on whether there really was such a person or not.
Oh, that's my field. I love that. I think I've read just about every book on the historical right. Jesus, historical analysis of the Bible, and so on. And it is fascinating stuff. It really is. But the problem with a blog is, as I get it, is you have to keep writing.
Yeah, well,
if you're going to have a blog, I guess you have to write every day, or at least at frequent intervals.
And my problem is I really need an audience. Now, I mean, admittedly, recording this program, I have an audience of one and who isn't always terribly kind, but at least you're an audience. And I cannot imagine an audience. I think my son can, you know, in his blog, imagines he's talking to hundreds of people, which he probably is, but he can't see them.
Well, radio, I don't think, should work that way. Radio should be talking to one other person. Now, it's easy when you have that person in the studio.
Right.
But when you're in an empty studio, you can envision one person listening to the radio, and you just talk to that one person. There may be hundreds, even thousands listening, but you should just talk to that one person.
You know, I have a couple of former students and friends who teach online courses. I could not do that.
No.
Because I need to see the reaction, good or bad, you know, of what's happening, what I'm saying, how is it going over?
And for me, a class of students shapes what you teach. This year, I'm back in Comm University after an absence of many years. I forget who talked me into that. One of our guests, I think. Brian Alm. That's right. And so I'm doing a course called The Play is the Thing. 4 lectures, and it'll just be really stuff the Guild has done. One on Greek tragedy, one on Greek comedy, one on Shakespearean comedy, one on Shakespearean tragedy. And it's formless, and yet it will take its form from what I bring to the class that day and what the students bring to the class. And to me, that's the best kind of teaching there is.
Well, you could do a Genesius Guild blog, and then if people were recording it, they could actually take down the memoirs you are supposed to be writing about the Genesius Guild without your knowing it.
You know, on the Genesius Guild website, there are a bunch of lectures I've written in the past.
All right.
The LB bits or something, and there's all kinds of stuff there. But that's the Guild, and I'm no longer in the Guild. You know, I'm retired. I tell you, retired. And I don't want to be in competition with my good friends. But no, I think the blogosphere is safer without us. At least I intend to do my bit to make it safe. But we have book bag. Yes, we can.
Do you have a book?
I have a book in my hot little hands right here, and it's a good thing because it's a little book. It's what I call a sort of book. If you go to Barnes & Noble's and other commercial booksellers this time of year, you'll find tables and piles of little books. And I call them sort of books because they're usually, you know, 10 ways to do this, or pictures of kittens with cute captions. This one I picked up because it's the Little Book of Writer's Wisdom, edited by Stephen D. Price. And I happen to be interested in quotations. I love to come across a beautiful sentence. Eric Hoffer was the guy, the stevedore,
right.
said, if he comes up with a good sentence, it makes his day. And so I'm always looking for these things. And this is full of quotations from authors. Let's open a page here. The reason one writes isn't the fact he wants to say something. He writes because he has something to say. F. Scott Fitzgerald. Carlos Fuentes. One wants to tell the story like Scheherazade in order not to die. It's one of the oldest urges of mankind. It's a way of stalling death. Who else? Let's skip over. Most of the basic material a writer works with is acquired before the age of 15. That's interesting. I'm not sure how true it is. I'm very much aware in the writing of dialogue, or even in the narrative too, of a rhythm. There has to be a rhythm with it. Interviewers have said, you like jazz, don't you? Because we can hear it in your writing. And I thought that was a compliment. That's from Elmore Leonard, who really is very good at writing dialogue. And most of the stories are dialogues. And it goes that way all the way through the book. There's some interesting pictures of paintings and photographs and so on. Albert Camus said a novel is never anything but a philosophy put into images. Skip ahead, see what else. Paul Valéry said a poem is never finished, only abandoned. But you find things like that all the way through this. And let me quickly open the book again. And check. It's a pretty thick one. It goes for well over 200 pages.
All right.
So of all the sort of books I've run into, I like this one the most, and they are cheap. Costs $7 to $9. So you can't go wrong with that. If you're looking for interesting things to buy around holiday time, and buying a book for another person is, I think, the riskiest thing you can do, you might look at one of these sort of books. And the Little Book of Writer's Wisdom is the perfect thing to give to someone who is a writer. Do you know any such?
No.
No. You fraud. You absolute fraud. You are constantly conning people into writing.
I know it. I know.
Yeah, well, give them that. It's only going to cost you, what, $8, $9?
Well, I should give them blank books to write in.
Well, they're available, too.
Yes, they are.
I mean, you know, this way you can just tell them it's all in here. All you have to do is read this, and this is all the advice you'll ever need. And you may even be right, for all I know. So it's a Little Book of Writer's Wisdom, edited by Stephen D. Price. And it's actually got a regular publisher, too. Skyhorse Publishing. Well, I say a regular publisher. I've never heard of that one, but I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. Anyway, if you're thinking about things to do, wander through a bookstore and look at the sort of books. You'll find they're full of the sort of things that intrigue you and pique your interest, and you may find something there that'll be of interest to you, and certainly you can find something of interest to someone in your circle of friends. If they're writers, I've just named the book. And with that, I think we'll summon up the theme and head on out of here. We've kind of wasted enough time today, but we'll come back next week and have another crack at it. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. Thank you for tuning in to Scribble. We'll see you next week.